You got that? When you want to talk, hit the button.
Good evening. This is the August meeting of the Health Commission for San Luis Obispo County. I'd like to welcome everybody who's here. Our first order of business will be the approval of the minutes. We have two meetings to approve. We have the June meeting and the July meeting. Everyone has a copy, I presume, of the June minutes. Are there any additions or corrections to those minutes?
Yes.
Commissioner Shmousis?
On the June minutes, number 9, Health Commissioner Updates, it's VOD, not VOID, Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster, V-O-A-D. Thank you.
Commissioner Hetherington?
I already gave Gina correction for Jennifer Joswiak's name. The spelling was wrong.
All right. Are there any other?
Ooh, there's one more. Jeff Pinak's name is spelled wrong, too. I'll call you with that one.
All right. Any other additions or changes? All right. I'll have a motion for acceptance of the June minutes with changes as noted.
I second.
It's moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
The minutes are approved for the month of June. Moving to the month of July, there is one a change in spelling. It would be under the second item, public comment. I believe that Jean has furnished us all with copies with the red change in it. So under Jesse Arnold's comments down the third line, it would be injunction, not adjunction. Same thing in the next line below. So it's just a respelling of the word. And that's all I have. Are there any other changes or additions to the minutes? There being none, I'll have a motion.
So moved.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
The minutes are now approved for July. So we will now move on to the public comment period. This is the time when anyone who would like to speak on any issue that is not on the agenda may come forward, and you have 3 minutes. Please state your name for the record.
I'm Eric Greening, and I appreciate the way in the last year or two your commission has started getting involved in land use and transportation planning issues. In that vein, I want to tell you about two processes of great importance to our county that are just starting. One is that our County Planning Commission has held its first hearing of a series thereof to implement the smart growth principles into our framework for planning, land use, and circulation, such that they would have general plan status. This is a very important development because it moves smart growth from lip service to actual on-the-ground reality. The specifics, the Planning Commission is going over in detail because that's their job, and they'll be having another hearing on it on August 30th and probably continuing through the fall. I would suggest there will probably be a 60-day gap between the time that it's at the Planning Commission and the time that it goes to the supervisors, at least a 2-month gap. I would suggest that you plan ahead. Contact Jamie Lopes in the Planning Department. If you want to weigh in on our general plan policies that come out of our smart growth principles, that would be your chance during the interval between when the Planning Commission finishes their work and when the Board of Supervisors begin. The other document of great importance to our county, earlier this month, the Council of Governments Board, which consists of the 5 supervisors plus a representative from each incorporated city, the transportation planning agency in the county, officially authorized the preparation of a major comprehensive update of our regional transportation plan. And that includes all modes, including the modes that give people exercise. I'm hoping we can get some real paradigm shifts. I might mention that the regional transportation plan is incorporated by reference in our county's framework for planning, and as such, has general plan status, and as such, should be updated in conjunction with and in cooperation with the implementation of the smart growth strategies in the framework for planning. So this is actually two trains running on parallel tracks that are meant to have commerce with each other as they roll. And again, I think your commission could have a productive role. I would suggest that at some point in the next few months, you invite someone from the Council of Governments to explain and present on the ongoing work on the Regional Transportation Plan and give you a voice. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Greening. Is there anyone else who would like to make a comment at this time? Then the public comment period is now closed. So we will move ahead to our subject for tonight, which is a report on the current status of GE crops in our county. Tonight is simply a report. We are not having a debate on whether GE crops are good or bad. And so we have a number of people who are knowledgeable on this subject who are now going to speak. And our first speaker will be Jesse Arnold, who is a Cambria resident, and I believe he handed us some information from Slow GE Free. Welcome, Mr. Arnold.
Thank you. May I sit over here, or do you want me at the podium?
Well, wherever you're most comfortable.
Okay. Sit over here.
Okay.
Okay. Good evening. Yes. Thank you for inviting me. My name is Jesse Arnold. I do live in Cambria. I also wanted to let you know that I do have a degree in ornamental horticulture from Cal Poly. In the early 70s, I taught a class in organic gardening, a community class for Cuesta College. I've been having fun growing organically grown vegetables as a hobbyist since the late 60s. And one of the crops that I grow is open pollinated corn. So for SLOGE Free, we did a corn survey this year. And I would like to thank all the growers who did respond. Oh yes, and I would like to thank Bob Lilly and Roger Shipp in the Ag Department for giving us the information so we could contact the various growers. I mailed out the survey and did some phone call follow-ups. We had 11 responses. There will be a little bit of difference between my report tonight and the one I've handed you because two of the forms came in after that report was printed up. So we did end up with a total of 11 respondents. One was by way of a face-to-face interview, someone who didn't care to fill out the form but was willing to talk to me. We had six certified organic growers, four people conventional growers. The questions we asked is, are you growing genetically engineered corn? And none of the respondents were doing that. Then of the other question we asked was, are you certified organic? And six answered that. So the others obviously were just conventional growers. Then we asked, were you aware that genetically engineered corn is being grown in two locations within San Luis Obispo County? And of the certified organic growers, four were aware, two were not. Of the conventional growers, two said yes, they were aware, three said no, they were not. And the other question we asked there was, are you concerned that genetically engineered corn being grown in the county might contaminate your field or seeds? And you wouldn't be surprised that the certified organic growers all said yes, they were concerned about that. Of the conventional growers, one expressed a concern and four said no, they were not concerned. Then I would like to comment on, the other thing I will mention was that of these people on the list, three were ones that weren't on the Ag Department's database, that they can't catch up with everyone. And I'm sure there are a few other growers out there that we didn't find, but I think this is a pretty good representative of what's going on in the county. I do want to comment on the three people who did not return the survey. One I've spoken about before, and that's the Avila Valley Barn, Dr. John DiVincenzo's business. I think you're all aware that he has told people most recently at the Avila Valley Advisory Council that he is growing the genetically engineered VT corn, and he told those folks that he is planning to label it this year. The other place that didn't return the form was Cal Poly. Jeff Wong has been very nice to talk to me and tell me what he knows, and you'll hear from him later in the presentation. But the department head, Dr. John Peterson, told me in my follow-up phone call that he said it's a horribly biased survey and he didn't feel in a position to respond to it. So that's why we didn't get a response to the form from Cal Poly. And I think you'll see in the write-up the question for Cal Poly and for people who want to ask them is, as Jeff will tell you, or what he told me was they're growing a genetically engineered silage corn. So the question is, if they are growing sweet corn, which I don't know whether they are or they aren't, but if they are, will there be cross-pollination and are they going to check on that question? Then the third person who didn't respond was Hayashi and Sons. They're well-known growers in the county. They sell at Farmers Market, and I think they have a farm stand down in Arroyo Grande where they're based. They did sell corn last year. Since they didn't respond to the form or a follow-up phone call, I don't know if they are growing corn this year. But if you see them selling at the Farmers Market, you can ask them what kind it is. And, of course, that's what I would advise you to do. Also, wherever you're buying it, ask people what kind it is. Be an aware consumer. I think that pretty well sums it up. Again, thanks to all those who helped make the survey possible. Thank you for listening, and I will take any questions if people want to ask me any questions, and I'll do my best to answer.
Are there any questions from commissioners? Commissioner Hetherington.
Is it possible that we could wait till after everybody's presented and then ask questions, or should we do it individually? Does it matter?
I'd prefer that we just do it one by one. I don't want to get into a situation where we're asking questions and having people come back and then come back. Okay. So if you have questions, go ahead and ask them of each speaker as they appear.
Okay. Thank you, Jesse, for doing this. I think it's very innovative, and I think it certainly answers a lot of questions. When you were talking to these people, I noticed that you didn't ask a question about any testing of corn for cross-pollination. Did that come up in any of the conversations? Or?
No, that did not.
Okay.
But my further comment here would be that I would hope that the Ag Commissioner, the Health Officer, and this Commission, the Health Commission, would back up what Dr. Thomas said last summer at the supervisors meeting, that there should be notification and there should be labeling. And in notification, I would say, particularly for test plots, and especially in the test plots, if it's going to be something pharmaceutical or manufacturing, the industrial crops that they're doing, those obvious, to me, from a health standpoint, we should know that. And that's what this commission is about. That's really a health issue for sure. So,
are there any other questions of commissioners?
I have a question.
Commissioner Shimosis.
Was there any discussion about cross-pollination of other crops from the GE corn? Or is that a possibility?
No. Corn, it's not going to cross-pollinate another crop.
Commissioner Grena?
Is this information on the website? Is there a SLO-GE website?
There is an SLO-GE free website, but our person who's putting it up is away on business in Ohio right now. I'm pretty sure he will get it up sometime after he gets back. So it will be up there eventually. But
is there a way of identifying where in the county these farms are located so we can get a map of...
Oh, Yes, I mean, I have addresses for all of them. I didn't think to make a map, but that's information is available. So tell you what I'm not online. If you want to give your mailing address, I could make you a list with the addresses and get that to you.
Thank you. I will.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions from commissioners? Well, thank you very much, Mr. Arnold. We appreciate that you were here and that you brought us this information from your survey. The next person on the agenda is Robert Lilly, who is the director of the County Ag Department. Thank you very much for being here.
You're welcome. Members of the commission, Bob Lilly, County Ag Commissioner. As you might know, the issue of GE crops started here locally in March of 2004. So I won't go into all the history, but I will provide you an update of what's happened since the last time the Board of Supervisors addressed the matter, which was August of 2006. If you are interested in what occurred prior to that, in my staff report to the Board last August, I did provide a summary to the Board of all of the issues that led up to the last Board of Supervisors meeting. So that's in the record if you chose to look at that. So last August, committee, which I chaired, the GE Crop Committee, did a presentation to the Board of Supervisors, and the action of the Board of Supervisors at that time was to accept our report and to accept our table of coexistence guidelines that we worked hard on for a couple of years. And also included in the motion was for the ag industry to further address how to implement the coexistence guidelines and to also address this issue of notification. And then the Health Commission Task Force really was the place where the labeling was addressed at that point in time. I'm sure you're familiar with that. So then to walk you through what's occurred since then, starting the following month in September then, ag industry representatives started to address the issue of notification as was requested by the board. So there was a Farm Bureau representative and the president of the organic growers met and started to, along with the cooperative extension, to address possibilities and look into the issue of notification. So they started by looking at what other programs were available in the state, how agriculture communicates and how things are mapped and how the industry might notify, use notification as a means of accomplishing a task. They also requested that that I provide them examples of notification that are currently used in my office. And these are regulatory programs where the industry is required to notify us, such as for pesticide applications or for plant quarantine purposes, for farmers market certifications, and there's lots of programs that require notification, and those are part of a regulatory program that is adopted by the state that is administered locally by the Ag Commissioner. And then we came up with a program that's part of the Crop Improvement Association that's run through the University of California in Davis. It's like a third-party notification system. It's not so much a regulatory approach, but it is an established notification system called the PINMAP. And that was introduced to our group, and Mary Bianchi's here to explain that a little more thoroughly as a member of the university. And then we also, of course, continued to question the USDA, which is the regulatory agency for genetically engineered crops in the United States. And on the issue of notification specifically, I asked them for information. And there's two kind of levels that need to be addressed. There's crops that are under an experimental use permit that are regulated by USDA. And then there's also a process called permitted and released. So once the applicant satisfies the requirements of the permit with USDA, they go through a process called permitting and release. So the crop is permitted then to be sold in the marketplace, and that it is released then from the regulatory program. So how that relates to notification then, I was told by USDA that for experimental crops that these sites are confidential and that notification would not be possible because of that. They don't even tell the state unless they sign a confidentiality agreement where the sites are located. And for the permitted and released crops, there's no regulatory requirement then that the grower who buys the genetically engineered crop would notify anyone. So that would be a voluntary effort if that was deemed appropriate, short of some sort of a local or state regulation requiring such a thing. So then in September, I sent an email to the Board of Supervisors that updated the board as far as what the local efforts were. Moving on to February of 07, I sent in a formal request as the Ag Commissioner to USDA called a FOIA request. Of course, you have to acronym city when you work for the government, Freedom of Information Act. And so I requested specifically that the USDA notify us of any genetically engineered crops grown in the county, specifically related to the test plots. And I have not heard a response from them other than an informal communication that said that this information was confidential, but I haven't heard, haven't gotten a written response back from my request. Also, a key thing happened. Two things happened in February of 07. There was two lawsuits where the court ruled on issues related to genetically engineered crops that are surely going to change the way that they're dealt with in the United States and in California. The first lawsuit related to Roundup Ready alfalfa. And that was a crop that was permitted and released. It was available and used in the marketplace. The court ordered and found that the USDA had done an unsatisfactory job as far as dealing with potential contamination issues. And so they ordered the USDA to do an environmental impact statement and adjust the regulatory approach to address that. And they also found that USDA did an inadequate job in dealing with potential weed resistance issues. That's a specific thing related to Roundup Ready alfalfa. And amongst other things, they also ordered that, as of last March, that no more Roundup Ready alfalfa could be sold in the United States. They put a stay order on the sale of that product. So all of that is pending then, the USDA coming up with an environmental impact statement and a revised regulatory approach to address the issues found by the judge. Second court ruling, also last February, related to Roundup Ready bent grass. Bent grass is an ornamental grass used in turf for golf courses. And this related to a site that was under USDA permit that was for an experimental test plot that hadn't yet been permitted. And the court also found that the USDA had not done an adequate job dealing with potential contamination issues. They did not address whether the bent grass could turn into a noxious weed. And they put a order, or they established an order, that all of the trials related to this product had to be stopped until the USDA dealt with that issue as well. So they also ordered an environmental impact statement and the regulatory package to address those as well. Also in February of 07, the committee met with the UC Davis staff that deals with genetic engineering and also with staff that dealt with this pen map that Mary's going to tell you about. And so we explored options and possibilities of how we could establish such a notification and mapping system here locally. And we talked about many proposals. Still unresolved, though, at this time, is whether such a system should be a voluntary system or a regulatory system. And still unresolved is who should be notified. So some of the possibilities would be that the growers could have an internal communication, a notification and mapping outside of the government involvement. Or a different system would be that the Ag Commissioner's office would be notified and we would be involved with it, but then it would be a matter of public record then, such a notification. Okay, last two items. Next Thursday, August 16th, the USDA is going to be formally rolling out their environmental impact statement on those two court orders that I mentioned earlier, and we'll be proposing the draft regulations on how genetically engineered crops will be regulated on the ground differently than they are now, which could include notification. And that's going to be done on the campus at UC Davis, and so we'll be tracking that closely. And then finally, I'm the chair of the, we have the Ag Commissioner Association statewide, and I'm the chair of the committee that's addressing genetically engineered crops, and I've invited the USDA regulatory officials from D.C. to come to Sacramento this December, and they've accepted that, and they'll be explaining to all the Ag Commissioners how the new regulatory approach might look and how we may be involved with that at the state and at the local level. So that's what's up the last year, and I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for that very comprehensive report. Are there any questions from commissioners? Commissioner Grena?
Yes, will the USDA publish these new regulations in the Federal Register, and do you know when that's going to be coming out?
I understand that it'll come out on Thursday. They're going to roll it out at the public meeting and with the, on the online. There'll be proposed regulations for comment.
Okay.
Yes.
Commissioner Hetherington.
Thanks, Bob. With these new proposals coming out, this could actually change the whole dynamic of reporting genetically engineered crops. Is your committee going to reassemble after these are put out, and are you going to review them? What do you envision as your next step?
Yes, we'll work cooperatively with the California Department of Food and Ag, and we'll probably provide comments. We'll vote and provide comments on the USDA proposed regulations and address how they may affect us as a potential regulatory official that might be implementing some of these things.
Any other questions from commissioners? Commissioner Warren.
I have a question on the EIRs that you were talking about. Is it my understanding that those are kind of done after the fact, before the crop is planted, or after the crop's planted rather than before?
The judge found that the USDA hadn't sufficiently met the requirements of NEPA, the National Environmental Protection Act, which is the equivalent of CEQA in California, when they established the rulemaking process. So they have to, yes, they'll have to do it. Well, they put a stop on the planting of these particular crops, and now they have to do the environmental statements at this time.
Okay, and does that only apply at this point to those two particular crops, or?
That's a very good question. That's still to be determined. We'll find out more on Thursday.
Go ahead, Commissioner Hetherington.
Bob, you can pretty much identify who's growing corn in the county, can't you? I mean, either by just visualization. I know that necessarily they don't have to come to you and say, can I plant corn? But I know that Jesse is, and the Slow GE Free People have gone to a lot of trouble to plot out and survey these farmers. Is it realistic to envision a map of where corn is being grown in the county? I mean, we've got this baseline here, but if there's any other corn crops that we know of, so that if, you know, the new ruling says, well, you know, you should be testing for cross-pollination or contamination, that you would be prepared to do so.
Yes, Jesse found he actually saved the taxpayers some money because he did all the legwork. Our database is our pesticide permitting system, and once a year the grower comes in to get the annual pesticide permit, and so they give us the crops that they're planning on growing. And so with any sort of rotational crops, they might change their mind. With a permanent crop, obviously, if you have a vineyard, you have a vineyard, but corn is being a rotational crop. Many of them, as Jesse found out, had told us that they anticipated growing corn, but they never actually grew corn. And others that weren't anticipating growing corn all of a sudden maybe decided to grow corn. So the answer is that it's very difficult on a rotational crop to know what's in the ground at any one point in time. It would take an army of inspectors to go out in all the valleys of the county to track that on an ongoing basis. So we have a general idea of who anticipates growing corn through our record system, but at any one point in time, if corn is in the ground or not, we don't necessarily have that information.
So subsequent to them coming in and applying for a pesticide application permit, say, because there's only certain pesticides that you're going to use on corn. Of course, unless they're Roundup Ready corn, that might throw a cog in the wheel. But you would be able to ID at that point, geographically, who's anticipating planting corn.
I don't think there is.
Yes.
Is there Roundup Ready corn?
No, it's BT corn.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Insecticide.
Yeah, for the, yeah. Remember the worms or whatever they are that they get in the corn. Okay, was there another, Dr. Thomas.
Hi, Bob, thank you. Do the satellite photo capabilities, do they have, is there software or anything that would allow you to filter and determine something like that? I mean, I imagine the sheriff might have something like that that filters and decides where other kind of crops might be planted.
We use aerial mapping data, but it's done every 3 years, so it's just a snapshot at that point in time.
Does the sheriff do annual satellite photos, I wonder?
You'll have to ask the sheriff that.
Okay. Jesse, at the end, you could make a comment. I think we won't do questions from the audience, if that's agreeable.
Several of us have them. Will the speakers remain until the end?
You know what I'm working on. I'm trying not to have any sort of a debate. So, but questions. All right, let's go ahead and have questions from the audience. Sure. Let's do that. Go ahead, Jesse. Mr. Arnold. Come forward.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. You mentioned that they couldn't sell the Roundup Ready alfalfa. Did I hear you right?
You can't. They couldn't sell the seed. The crop that was already in the ground is still be allowed to be marketed.
Yeah, okay.
But as of March of 07, there was a cutoff date where the seed was not allowed to be sold until these issues were resolved.
Yeah, I just wanted to get clear on that. Thank you.
Eric Greening, two quick questions. Relative to the response, the county's response to the draft EIS and regulations on the litigated crops, will this draft be before the Board of Supervisors and visible to the public, or is it just on the staff level? And if it's just on the staff level, how will it speak for the county? The other question is pesticide permits as the locus of surveying. How are organic growers surveyed? Because we're interested not just in who's growing BT corn, but in who's growing corn that's vulnerable to contamination. And again, also home garden type growers to get the complete picture of corn in this county. Thank you.
Yeah, on the question of the Board of Supervisors, there's no date scheduled currently to update the board on the genetically engineered crops, but I'm happy to do that at any time. On the second question, we have a separate database for organic growers because they have to register with us. Yes, the answer is yes, we would have the list of organic corn growers as well.
Commissioner Shemousis?
Hi. I was wondering, given the fact that there's been some information regarding contaminants left in the soil after GE crop has been planted, what are the ramifications in that regard, particularly as it might apply to somebody wanting to grow an organic crop where a prior GE crop has been grown?
Yeah, most of the issues are related to open pollinated crops like corn, and it's the corn pollen drifting onto other corn. It's not so much any residual left in the soil. But the risk would be if you had GE corn next door to organic corn, you could potentially run into a drift contamination problem of the organic corn with the genetically engineered corn. It's pollen drifting in the air. It's not left on the ground.
I understand that. But in the case of, say, alfalfa, which I know we're not, it's kind of a hypothetical question, but does that not leave contaminants in the ground?
No, the issue with alfalfa, there was a finding that bees can forage on blooming alfalfa and transfer the pollen to other crops that, you know, in the same genus and species that might be susceptible.
Other grasses. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lilly. And now Ms. Bianchi is going to show us what you, the Davis map, is that the...
talk just a little bit about it.
You'll talk about it. Do we have a picture?
Pardon me?
You didn't have any visuals?
No.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you.
I'm Mary Bianchi. I am a horticulture farm advisor with University of California Cooperative Extension and currently the acting department head for our department here in San Luis Obispo County. And thank you to the commissioners for asking me to come tonight. Bob talked a little bit about the identification for the need of a notification system for our San Luis Obispo County growers. And trying to, rather than reinventing the wheel, trying to use those notification mechanisms that are already in place in California for agriculture. The California Crop Improvement Association provides a seed certification service within California. It's a voluntary quality assurance program for the maintenance and increase of agronomic and vegetable crop seeds. It also, in its other functions, provides organic certification, potato certification, and identity preservation programs for agriculture. And it's the official seed certifying agency in California. It's actually not a University of California program, but it is a nonprofit corporation. It has an executive director who reports to an elected and representational board of directors. As part of its function in terms of identity preservation, the association put together an interactive pin map system, which is online, and it's maintained on the association's website. The website actually is what is hosted by the University of California at Davis. And this internet pin map is provided as a tool to growers in order to help them maintain field isolation distances for their seed crops. It's not, it doesn't enforce field separation. It is a voluntary system, and it is the users of the PinMap system who have the responsibility to assure isolation requirements are maintained for their crops. So it is a functional system that is currently used. The question of, does not resolve the question of who pins on the map, whether it is in or out, depending on your point of view. Whether it's organic producers who would pin their location on the map or growers of genetically engineered crops. But it does allow a system whereby an individual grower could pin on a map and then other users of the system could identify that location and a certain radius around that location. In talking with the hosts of the website, it would require about $2,000 to develop a page on the site that might be used by San Luis Obispo County growers, and then it would be the responsibility of the users of the site to maintain the site through their pinning fees. The system actually now uses Google Maps as a way of pinning locations, so it's relatively easy for growers to be able to identify their location or locations around them. It is password protected, and access is through registration. So just a little bit about the system. If there is interest, we can demonstrate it. It does require an interactive site to do that, but that is a potential. And the programmers and the hosts are willing to work with the industry if they're interested in putting that into effect.
Are there questions from commissioners? I just had a question. This pin map, has this... is this something that is seriously being considered to be used here, or is it just an idea, just a way to do it?
It's a way to do it, if there's interest in doing that. was certainly has been discussed by the committee.
Have you had anybody say they'd be interested in doing it?
We wouldn't go that far.
Okay. So the cost of that would be borne by the growers, not by the taxpayers. Would that be correct?
After the initial development of the page on the website, then the maintenance of the website would come from those individuals who actually place a pin on the map or who want to gain access to that information.
Oh, okay. So if you wanted to know where people were growing something, you would become a member and then you would be able to see that map. Is that correct?
It is a system that's used by agriculture uh-huh. at this point. And it does require an application uh-huh. to be involved in the system.
Okay. Commissioner Hetherington?
Mary, is it being used in other parts of the state of California for identifying genetically engineered crops versus, say, like organic or conventional?
There was a page that was developed for alfalfa seed producers for the biotech seeds. I don't know what the status of it that is now, given the fact that there's a moratorium on the production of the seed. But they did go through the process of developing a procedure by which interested growers could participate in pinning their locations.
Was that prompted by those that were growing the genetically engineered alfalfa or those that were worried about contamination from genetically engineered, or was it a collaboration?
It was a collaboration between the two.
Thank you.
Commissioner Warren?
Yes, is this something that you find might be helpful to use this tool, either for your department or the county ag department, and how would you use that?
I think both. I'll speak a little bit for Bob, perhaps, and if I say this wrong, you feel free to disagree. But I think what we do within Cooperative Extension and certainly with the Ag Commissioner as far as this committee is concerned is to facilitate mechanisms by which they can be successful in achieving their goals. So I would not envision myself using this program. I would envision myself facilitating the agricultural community, both organic and conventional, in this county to use this type of a system. Got it, Bob? Okay.
Well, thank you very much for bringing us that information and for taking the time to be here tonight. Okay. Next is Dana Merrill. He's the owner of Pomar Junction Vineyard and participated in the Ag Task Force Coexistence Committee? Was that? Yes.
After a while, you can't remember what you're on.
Yeah. Thank you for being here.
Okay. Yeah, my pleasure. I only have 8 slides, but something to look at besides having to look at me, so that's something anyway. Basically, I am going to give you kind of a non-technical, supposedly, there we go, non-technical look at, from my perspective, of what's going on. I am a vineyard owner in Templeton. I also have a company that manages quite a few vineyards in the area, so I'm active in the industry, I guess you would say. One of the boards I serve on is the State Pierce Disease Board, and we, as an industry, have collected money by assessing ourselves annually for the past 5.5 years to try to come up with a cure for Pierce's disease, which is a fatal disease of grapevines. It's a bacteria spread by a vector called the glassy wing sharpshooter, and there's presently no cure for that disease, so we're very motivated to pay some money to see if we can't solve it. Had quite a disaster in Temecula, you might have heard about a few years ago, and there's been some strikes in the San Joaquin Valley, but basically this disease hitches its way, the sharpshooter hitches its way on nursery plants from Southern California, and Bob's department has done a great job at helping to keep our county sharpshooter free, and that's no small accomplishment, so that's the best thing, is to not have it here at all. But one of the things to advise you folks on is the fact that there's a considerable amount of research dollars being invested to find a cure. And you know, to the tune of probably $20, $23 million a year. About a fourth of that comes from the industry, and then it's matched with the state and the feds. And probably about 10 to 15% of that money is research that has to do with genomic research, GE, biotech, that kind of thing. And so it's still, given that we don't have a solution, we certainly haven't taken anything off the table. And I pointed out that I'm not a scientist, so no misunderstanding. I'm a farmer. I did go to Cal Poly, though, which obviously qualifies me to some extent. I would say that basically where we are is we're doing a lot of basic research. One of the things we found out is we really didn't know very much about Pearson's disease or the bacteria other than it spread sort of like mosquitoes and malaria. And now we have quite a bit of money coming in, so there's probably more research being done on genomics and possible GE solutions for Pierce disease than anything else. But there's actually a number of other things that are going on, trying to reduce, you know, sulfur applications in vineyards, pesticide, you know, maybe make plants more drought resistant, that kind of thing. But far and away, it's the Pierce disease is the biggest driver. A lot of times people think about, you know, when you hear GE and grapes, you think there's going to be transgenic vines, and someday there may be some. But at the moment, from what I can tell, is pretty much a lab setting type situation. There have been vines that have had genetic engineering done to them, created, if you will, to try to find the durable resistance for this bacteria so the vines will survive. And it looks like in Florida, and there are several places in the United States where they have been planted outside, but there are no commercial plantings so far. And it's pretty much the main place they've done this is parts of the United States where the Pierce disease is so bad that it's not impossible to raise grapevines at all, like in Florida and parts of Texas. There's so many sharpshooters and so much PD that, you know, any other solution doesn't look very promising. There are no commercial vines available in the United States from any nursery. There is an effort of some significance going on at UC Davis to develop Pierce disease resistant vines, however, because even without the glassy wing, PD does get spread by other sharpshooters. In the Napa Valley, it's very common along the river. In fact, there's a spot in Edna Valley next to some landscaping in a subdivision where one grower has a heck of a time with the vines keep getting infected, and it's the blue-green sharpshooter. It doesn't spread with the same efficiency. It doesn't kill the whole vineyard, but it kills a few acres each year, and it's been tough to deal with. But what I was able to determine looking at Dr. Andy Walker is a noted grapevine researcher developing new vines. And he has gotten to the point where he was able to use the GE research and what they've learned about genomics to identify the gene that was responsible for conferring resistance. And then what he did was go back and conventionally breed to come up with plants that would then resist the PD. So it's an application of GE, but it's not literally a transgenic vine. And what it said on the latest update on the website said that he's within a couple of years of having vines that would be 85% resistant and maybe 94% resistant with the next step. And then what, of course, what you have to do is you have to taste the wine, see if it tastes any good, or see whether Cabernet even tastes like Cabernet anymore or what. So I guess what I'm saying, it's a very long process, and we're in the beginnings of it. It's very important, but I wouldn't put a lot of time and worry into, you know, thousands of acres of transgenic vines are going to be planted in the next year or so. I mean, it's many, many years away if it happens at all. And it might very well be a conventionally bred plant when it's all said and done. One other effort to point out is that there is an effort to also think about maybe developing a rootstock that has resistance. Most vines are grown on rootstocks and not grown on our own roots for disease resistance. And there's been some thought that it might be possible to develop a rootstock that has resistance that it would confer to the Scion being like Chardonnay or Cabernet or whatever. So that quite possibly could be a modified root, but the top wouldn't be. Again, all of these things are we're just probably at the beginning of all of this. It's going to take a while to see where it's all going to lead. But that, you want to know what's going on. That is something that is going on. What do people think about it? Well, it's variable. There's no question about it, whether you're here in San Luis or you're statewide. We all have to sell our crops, so if there's any breathing that anyone might not buy it, that doesn't exactly make you, you know, it's not a plus. There's no question about it. I think that I noticed one quote from Dr. Carol Meredith, actually, who was at UC Davis a long time, a noted GE researcher, she pointed out that a demonstrable benefit could tip the balance toward acceptance. And what I run into, and I'm on the Pierce's Disease Board, we have one organic growers on our board, and a very bright guy, and obviously steadfastly against any of this GE. He doesn't want to do any GE research. He doesn't want anything to do with it. I don't want to have any of it come near a vineyard at all. But I asked him, I said, okay, you know, imagine this beautiful vineyard you got in Napa. What if you had Glassy Wing Sharpshooter just about to kill this whole thing next week? I mean, would you still not want to use it? He says, well, I might want to think about that then. I mean, I would think about it more seriously then because I'd have a clear and present threat. So it all depends on your perspective, whether you think it's off the table or it isn't. And I guess that's what Carol was saying with this comment. The other item, of course, is if we get more invasive pests. I mean, we have a dickens of a time with the Glassy Wing Sharpshooter. God knows how many other pests might arrive. I mean, I've heard numbers like there might be 40 or 50 a year that are trying to hitchhike into California all the time. And they're not only a threat to our conventional ag, they're a huge threat to organic agriculture because organic farms do not have all the resources to go and clean up something and, you know, might lose their certification. So it's a big threat. Invasive pests are a real big concern of ours. I talked about international marketing. It's a concern today. But I'll have to say, when I was checking the internet, since I haven't been involved in the thick of this in a couple of years, there is a great deal of activity going on in terms of genomic research, in terms of genetic plants, in terms of everything you can think of. And it's and many times in countries that publicly say they won't accept any GE produce or anything. So I think we have to think about safety, but we also got to think about the fact that there's an awful lot going on. It's a very fast-changing world, which I think is somewhat scary, but that's the way it is. One aspect of the wine industry you might not have thought about, and I know I don't think it was first on my list, but what may be a lot closer than worrying about transgenic vines are yeast for making wine, because yeast and cheese is commonly genomic research and techniques and gene splicing and everything else is used, and again, I don't want to go too far, so I'm not an expert, but I know at least as far as some of the enzymes that are made to make yeast, it's a common part of the production process, even in countries like England. I remember that from our great Measure Q effort. So, in other words, that is going on, and there is one yeast that is licensed for use in the United States called ML101. I believe it was developed in South Africa. I don't know anybody that's using it, but it's a more efficient yeast. So, instead of having to have two fermentations to get rid of different deal with lactic acid or malic, or you have a yeast that converts both of them at once. And on a big winery, that might be something that was, you know, a little winery might not matter much. A big winery might be a big efficiency item. And so this company that invented it thought that it would be something everybody would want to use. I think at the moment, as I understand it, if you use that yeast, you will not get into European countries and you won't get into these countries that ban GE. So that probably is not going to do a lot for sales. I don't know whether it's used locally. I would almost bet my existence that it isn't, that no one around here is using it. I don't know if anyone is using it. And again, you never know if you're going to export or what's going on. I don't believe around here it's being used, but it is on the radar screen, so it's something to be aware of. What other local thoughts do I have? I don't see any GE vines on the horizon. I enjoyed the time I spent on the coexistence committee. We did wine grapes first. And then when the committee switched to corn, it was really interesting, but I don't have any more time to deal with the corn. I'm not an expert on corn, so it's probably better somebody else dealt with it. But one thing that's unique about vines are self-pollinating. And while there's some pollen that does come out of grapevines are probably not your biggest worry in terms of whatever side of the equation you are. It's probably more of an issue in terms of marketing, more of an issue in terms of, you know, maybe the yeast could be an issue at some point. But the vines themselves growing, the pollen does not spread. Otherwise, you couldn't plant Chardonnay next to Cabernet. I mean, the first row would be blush wine. I mean, it doesn't happen. We grow them right next to each other. So I think the wine grape crop is a pretty stable crop. And having said that, I don't see transgenic vines coming in Paso Robles or San Luis Obispo in the near future. What else can I say? I only got two more points. PD remains an issue, but we've kept the sharpshooter out. I mean, exclusion is the way to try to protect your industry. But we don't know where the next one might come. We got apple moth. I mean, we didn't even know there was an apple moth in the state. And now all of a sudden there's apple. You know, we're now scared to death of apple moths, and they're endemic to Australia. And we asked Australians, "What do you do about it?" Well, we spray the dickens out of our vineyards all the time. That doesn't sound very uplifting. So there are going to be more threats, and I think A lot of us just don't want to see something taken off the table. The last point I'd make is that the genomic research has produced benefits to conventional breeding programs like Dr. Walker's. And, you know, go to the PD board website, and there's a newsletter where he discusses, he's a real down-to-earth fellow, and he's high-tech. I mean, he definitely used all these new techniques to find out what the gene was that converted the resistance, and it speeded up the process. Instead of taking 10 years to come up with these vines, he came up with them in 3. So, you know, we don't really know what the end game is, but it already is producing dividends. But the good news is you don't have to worry about transgenic vines. I think you're quite a ways off from that, if ever, if you ever have any, which you may not.
Well, thank you very much. So when you were on the task force for the separation or the subcommittee, it wasn't an issue really for grapes, is what
as
you
I
said.
As I recall, wasn't it? We end up there?
Yeah.
Basically, it wasn't really an issue for grapes.
So, yeah, and that grapes weren't going to harm anything else.
Right.
So that was sort of the end of your
Well, it seemed like open pollinated products naturally, or if you're going to talk about something, it seems like that would be what you would talk about and not. There's no sense spending a lot of time talking about something you don't need to when there's plenty of other things to talk about.
Sure.
That's kind of where that ended up.
Okay. Are there any questions from commissioners? I was a little curious about the subcommittee as it went on after you were involved, when they started talking about corn, and I guess maybe Mr. Lilly is the person I should ask about that. So thank you very much for that presentation. It was very interesting. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, we chose grapes as the largest crop in the county, and there was a genetically engineered potential application, as Dana mentioned. But then we moved on to corn because the risk level was higher with an open pollinated crop. We don't have much corn grown in the county commercially, but it was probably the prime suspect as far as the crop to look at.
So as far as coexistence is concerned in this county now, is there, what sort of conclusions did you come up with?
Yeah, we did extensive research on coexistence practices, and there's a lot of information out there, and Mary did just a great job going through the research and coming up with all of the information that was available, and then we added to that. So our table of coexistence guidelines actually got placed statewide as a good table and is a really effective means for farmers to use to provide coexistence, such as buffers and plants flowering at different times and those types of things.
So in our county today, would you characterize that that growers are working these things out among themselves?
They certainly have the tools available to do that. To our knowledge, there's very little genetically engineered crop grown here. As was mentioned before, at the Valley Barn, there was genetically engineered corn grown a year or two back and at Cal Poly, and that's about it as far as we know. But we don't know for certain because there's not a requirement that they would tell us.
Okay. Any questions about that by commissioners? Oh, okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Lilly. Okay, and then our last speaker is Dr. Jeffrey Wong from Cal Poly, the Cal Poly Horticulture and Crop Science Department. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me. Basically, I was asked to speak about what Cal Poly is currently growing. This last year, I was asked by the dean to kind of oversee all genetically engineered growings on campus, and so I've kind of been able to follow it throughout the year. Currently at Cal Poly, we have about 20 acres of Roundup Ready silage corn for sale directly to the Cal Poly dairy, so all the corn actually stays on campus. We also have about eight acres of Roundup Ready alfalfa, which was grown or planted prior to the no plant date, and it is currently being managed by the farm operations group. That alfalfa will also go mainly to the dairy. Some of it might go to the rodeo or the animal science department. Last but not least, we did grow approximately about, I'd say less than a quarter of an acre of BT sweet corn, but we discontinued the planting and growing of it. Because we entered into an agreement with the Cal Poly Organic Farm to grow sweet corn for them. And because of that, chose not to use BT, instead went with a conventional sweet corn. Actually, let me make one more comment on Mary's comment about the pinning map. I have looked extensively at looking at using the pinning map for San Luis Obispo County. One of my biggest concerns with it is that there are not a lot of growers growing genetically engineered crops. And so for the spending of the money to be able to get that program up, I'm not sure if it's really the right choice for San Luis Obispo. For Fresno County, Kern County, maybe. But I'm not sure about San Luis Obispo County.
Thank you very much for your report. Are there questions from commissioners? Commissioner Hetherington.
Dr. Wong, are you doing any cross-testing of corn products on Cal Poly's immense campus to see if there's been any cross-pollination?
We have done some, but it's been very small because at the time, the only person really growing any kind of corn at all was me. We did have a senior project that looked at that and came up very inconclusive in terms of what the actual, in terms of the amount of contamination that there was. Unfortunately, contamination studies, like people would be comfortable with, are really not possible in terms of the number of sampling that you have to do in order to find that one in 10,000 is very cost prohibitive. And unfortunately, I do not have the funding to support that type of complete testing. All I can do is go off of reports about distances, and what we try to do is maintain our distances to make sure that we do not get cross contamination. It's basically following the same rules as seed production.
Let me make sure I understand that. You did about a quarter of an acre of BT sweet corn.
That is correct.
You're not doing that now, but you're planting, I'm assuming, and I don't want to assume, that you're growing the conventional corn in the same area where the BT corn was grown before?
Actually, we're growing it up on a hill, back behind the prevailing winds of where the BT was. And in terms of distances, in terms of planting distances as regulated by the seed industry for cross-contamination, we are way beyond the limits of that.
And are you going to be, I know you said it was cost prohibitive to be doing contamination studies, but are you checking the conventional corn to make sure that it's not contaminated?
At this point in time, actually, there is no conventional corn, at least being grown by Cal Poly, on the Cal Poly campus.
I thought that the organic farm...
It unfortunately was all eaten by vertebrates.
Maybe that's who you should test then. do you think...
It would be a good idea. We're always looking for senior project. We did a pin map on just the Cal Poly campus.
You know what? We actually have somewhat started that. I've been working with the organic farm on campus, the farm manager, and also Dr. John Phillips, who is the faculty in charge, or one of the faculty members in charge of the organic farm. And we have been working together to make sure that we do not have any kind of cross-contamination with any of the GE crops that we are currently growing.
I think because of Cal Poly's stellar reputation that, you know, everything should be on your table.
Right.
All that cross-contamination testing, you're the laboratory, you know, you're the little eco-laboratory
right.
for the rest of us. Thank you.
Commissioner Grena?
To take that a step farther, wouldn't it make sense to actually try and get cross-contamination? It would seem to me that you would be doing everybody a favor if you had some crops at specified distances away and actually see how it comes out.
When I was in grad school, we actually did that, and it's actually a really difficult process. The easiest thing to do is actually not even deal with genetically engineered crops, and that's actually what we used to do, and that's what I've been saying all along to the group that's actually doing the testing, is that what we used to do is we would take a purple corn, it's actually called purple aleurone, and you'd plant it in the middle of an 80-acre field, and out from that you would plant white corn. Mm. And basically, you would walk a transect, and you would look for purple kernels on a white ear. And what we found out when we did it was that within about 5 to 10 feet, we would find purple kernels. Once we got past that 10-foot radius, it got to the point where it was almost impossible to find any purple corn, even following the winds. Mm-hmm. I think we did end up getting one at 100 feet, but after that, we didn't find anything, at least in the ears that we sampled. Mm-hmm. And that is by far the best way to actually do it.
Also, it sounds as if you know in the county where these crops are being grown, you have a pretty good idea. Doesn't it make sense then to, or can't we just get a map of the county that shows these spots, that shows where our organic farms are, and just to make sure that they're not in close proximity?
It probably wouldn't be too difficult, but I think what Mr. Lilly pointed out is we make decisions very late sometimes. I know that I had every intention of growing BT sweet corn this year and changed my plans about 2 days before I was going to put it in the ground. It's just one of those things where just depending on how the season is going can make a big difference. And so in terms of going through the effort and saying, well, if I'm going to plant, I'm going to plant it here, I'm not sure if people are going to want to do that. I know that Cal Poly will. And like I said, we have been doing that amongst ourselves. But once you get outside of that, I'm not sure if it would actually continue.
Are there any other questions of Dr. Wong? Well, thank you. Oh, Dr. Thomas.
Thanks. You had said that you didn't know if there was enough genetically engineered products to make a pin map worth it in terms of the cost of I wasn't sure whether it was setting it up or the cost of maintaining.
Cost of setting up and also cost of maintaining. Because even on my, from my standpoint, the amount of genetically engineered crop that I grow and sell and actually make a profit on is so small, I actually am not sure if I could afford the pinning price.
So we heard $2,000 to set it up.
Correct.
Once in the county.
Right.
Which is not a lot.
It's
probably
not a
could
lot.
Get a grant for that somewhere.
Probably.
To do that. Once you get it set up, I guess that's either a question for you or Mary, looking at what kind of costs are you talking about to maintain it? Are you talking about $50 a farmer I wasn't sure whether you said who had an avocation or an application?
Application.
Application. I was trying to figure out the avocation.
Yeah. My understanding is that the cost of pinning once the page is established is $10. It's not a major cost to pin. The question really comes down to who puts their locations on the map. And that's, I think, the question that the industry is struggling with resolving is, do organic growers bear the responsibility of pinning their locations, or do those who are interested in growing genetically engineered crops, are they responsible for pinning their location? And so there are certainly more organic producers than there are genetically engineered or producers or conventional producers with GE concerns. So. I think that's the question that the industry is taking a look at.
All right, then. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody, for being here and for giving us this report. Huh? Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner Hetherington.
That's okay. I guess I kind of want to debate Dr. Wong, but I also want to support Mary in maybe sharing a burden between the organic growers and those that have intentions of doing genetically engineered crops. But for me, the onus has got to be on the GE people because they're the ones that could contaminate the organic crops. And so I sympathize with you not being able to come straight forward with an answer about who should bear the brunt. I think the $2,000 is well worth the money spent, and the $10, whether it's the organic guys or the conventional farmers, is a minimum cost to at least let people sleep at night knowing that their crops might not be contaminated or knowing where they are grown so that they know to check for cross-contamination. So I guess that's all I wanted to say.
All right. I think we will end the subject now. Thank you all very much for being here. We appreciate your time and effort and coming out tonight. And we'll move along with our agenda, which is the Public Health Department report. Dr. Thomas.
Good evening, commissioners. The report is part of your packet, but I'll hang on for a minute. So I used a brief format, 13 points today. Right now we're in the midst of determining fees that will go into effect July 1st, 2008. So we're in the midst of working on fees that will go into effect in about a year. They're due to the auditor this Friday, and then after they get reviewed and we write some memos, they'll go to the administrative office. We're also working on performance measure results for the fiscal year. And the public health lab finally got the certification from the LRN, the Lab Reporting Network, which is a national organization. The CDC has given us a full certification of a select agent laboratory. And so we now have access to the reagents we need to do testing for the bioterrorism select agents. That and a expansion of the public health lab space to improve the functioning and use some of the bioterrorism money to allow us to work in less of a cramped space on the bioterrorism agents and other agents is moving forward bit by bit. It's a painstaking process. Need to get the plans developed, send them to the state. They need to get approved. Then they have to go to the CDC to be approved, and then they have to come back. So state and then federal approval in order to move forward with that. Number four, we've talked about job vacancies and some of the challenges of filling vacancies. The County Human Relations, HR, it's a new name for personnel, has made some positive recruitment changes. Among other things, we'll be able to do a background check and a physical exam in the same time frame instead of having to wait 2 weeks for one to get approved and then 2 weeks for the other to get approved. So several steps along there that could save 3 or 4 weeks in the recruitment process, so that's actually good. We're in the second recruitment for a public health lab director. Dr. Mayer retired in November 2005. Our first recruitment, we only had one person who met all the requirements. Public health lab directors are a rare breed. They have to have a PhD in public health microbiology and a California public health microbiology certificate, or they have to be grandfathered in as of 1992, be working as a microbiologist in a laboratory. So hopefully we'll get some applicants this time, because right now we've got a part-time director on contract 15 hours a month. We're still working for a part-time physician to work Saturday sick call, and jail census is running about 600 inmates Monday to Friday and 700 on weekends. That's a lot of inmates to be taken care of. You've probably seen in the paper the health campus, the old General Hospital, has been renamed the health campus, and some of the administrative staff moved in several weeks ago. And our public health administrative staff moved in this last weekend. So drug and alcohol is moving in about a month, I believe, maybe 3 weeks. And SART is moving, we expect, late September, early October, perhaps. let's see, we're medical marijuana ID card. We're issuing all of 5 to 6 cards a month. That's down from 9 or 10 before, since the state raised their prices and since there's no marijuana dispensary in the county. The framework of the general plan adopting specific smart growth objectives was on the agenda of the Planning Commission. I did go speak to the Planning Commission, trying to make that link of the health and obesity prevention aspects of community design, I will follow up, and I expect one of us will go back. Again, they had some questions, and that's a good opportunity to provide some of the actual research demonstrating that communities, walkable communities, have lower obesity rates. There's a few studies. You can imagine it's a fairly complicated and expensive study to do, but there are several examples where that has indeed been shown. And on October 2nd, we will be presenting department performance profiles from public health, and mental health is making a presentation in November. I am due to make the PowerPoint presentation to the County Administrative Office the day after Labor Day, so we're under the gun to get that finished. And there was a discussion last month on the developing the recommendations or alternatives as requested by the board to reduce the general fund contribution to public health department, to reduce that growth percentage, 56% growth in general fund contribution for the health agency. We know that we will be going forward November 6th. I believe you did receive the via email some of the areas that we'd been looking at and hoping not to have to do for the 07-08 budget, we're continuing to have our thinking caps on. We haven't made a lot of progress because of all this other stuff we're doing, but we have communicated with health agency staff. They're all aware of the thought process we're going through. We've gotten some good suggestions from staff on ways to things that we could do that might reduce our costs or improve our revenue, and so that's heartening. But it is looking for potential $2 million that would reduction in general fund. There will be very painful things that the board will look at, and they'll have to make the determination. As our job is to say what it would take and what the impacts would be of making decisions. So, Jeff will be here next. Jeff Hamm will be here next month, and perhaps can talk about it some more. I'll be visiting my in-laws in Minnesota. And hopefully avoiding the mosquitoes at that time. On that note, our neighbors, Kern County is the epicenter this year for West Nile virus. They have 48 human cases out of the 86 in California this year, so they have the majority of the cases. Kings County next door has cases. We have two dead birds that have tested positive for West Nile virus. None of our mosquito pools have tested positive. In a lot of the areas of the county, it is pretty dry this year. So I think one of the major sources of mosquito pools is people overwatering rather than a lot of the creeks and collections of water bodies that have water in them other years are just plain dry this year. And finally, that we have a new BioTent terrorism prevention coordinator, program manager, Michelle Shoresman, who transferred from the AIDS program. Tracy Bardis from Office of Emergency Services is our expert on the OES side as an emergency services coordinator. So those are the, actually I added ones, those are the top 14 in public health. And I'm open to any questions.
Thank you for that report. Are there questions? Commissioner Hetherington?
I know at the retreat, Dr. Thomas, we had talked a little bit about, you know, the things that might be eliminated from the budget to make it more manageable. And I know one of the suggestions I had given to Jeff at the retreat was partnering with the cities to do water testing, because I saw that was on his short list of cuts. And I don't think that's a really good idea. Of course, I don't think any cuts to your budget are a good idea, but I certainly would like to see you explore those partnerships with Morro Bay, with the city of Pismo, mm-hmm. any of those coastal enclaves, and also using the Surfrider chapter in any way that you can.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I had a question. I thought I recalled that you... that the lab was going to have the capability to do a TB blood test. Is that correct?
We are in stages of hiring a microbiologist who will be able to bring that test up. So when we get a position in the budget, it's generally funded for 9 to 10 months. And it becomes funded July 1st. Well, it's not even funded July 1st. It's on your position allocation list July 1st. And at that point, you can go out and start looking for somebody to hire, go through the process. We've had an open continuous recruitment. So I believe that they're going through background checks right now. So once somebody's hired, then they can come on and work on getting the test set up.
So is that so specialized that it has to be a specific person that does that, or can an existing microbiologist get that certification or the
no? Well, once it gets set up, it takes a good amount of testing and verification that your methodology is working, develop your manuals of doing the testing, et cetera. It takes a lot of staff time to start a completely new test with completely new machinery. So that's number one. We don't have staff time to do that right now. We're running as fast as we can. And secondly, it is an additional staff time to do that test on a daily basis. We don't have, we need that additional staff to do that. They'll probably rotate the responsibility, but we can't do it with our existing staff until we augment our staff.
Oh, thank you.
But you do TB testing now, don't you?
We do TB skin testing.
Yeah,
there's
okay.
a new test called a QuantiFERON, which gives you a blood test instead of a skin test that you don't have to come back in 48 hours to get the result. And it does not have potential interaction with a BCG vaccine that some kids are given in third world countries.
Commissioner Massey?
Yeah. Specificity of that test, you know, offhand?
It's a lot more, a lot higher than it is the PPD. I can't tell you off the top of my head. I can't give you the number right off the top of my head.
Is it high?
Yes, it's very high.
Any other questions of Dr. Thomas? Thank you very much. You were running as fast as you could, I could tell. Thank you, and we appreciate all your good work, Dr. Thomas. Now I seem to have lost my agenda. But it must be time for Health Commission updates. I did notice that Mary Miller's in the back of the room, and we do have our reports that were sent to us on email as well as provided to us now. And I just wondered, Mary's been very faithful to come to our meetings, and I just wondered if we had, although she's not on the agenda, are there any questions that commissioners would like to ask Mary? Is there anything Mary would like to say to the commissioners?
Thank you. I'll be going through a name change, and my last name will be Cota, C-O-T-A. And I do want to share that, unfortunately, I haven't been able to secure an orthopedic surgeon to do like pro bono work, and I'm still working on that. And I was using CN International out of Goleta for a lot of our vision care, and their funding has been depleted, but it's not hopeless, so I wanted to give those quick updates. And we're hoping that we can, the medically fragile team can come up and share in September and be put on that agenda, if possible, for about 15 minutes.
Okay, medically fragile. Okay, we'll figure that out.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mary, and our congratulations in order.
Thank you. And the other thing, I did attend on Saturday the California Speaks, and a lot of people came up to me and said that my job was depressing, and I don't agree with that. I think that communicating and conversing, I think, are the most important, and working together, I think, is highly important, you know, collaborating and just trying to find solutions and positive, you know, to get positive outcomes. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Dr. Thomas?
Mary, just yes. In regards to California Speaks, maybe you could describe that just a little bit. I went to, and you might be interested, commissioners, to go to www.californiaspeaks.org, because by 3 o'clock, was it? My understanding is that they had collated all of the responses, and there's a nice graph there that shows that San Luis Obispo was one of 6, 8 sites, perhaps, and had 9% of the participants from the state.
Dr. Thomas?
Yeah.
I actually went, and I have a report.
I will not say another word.
And I have that graph.
Yeah, and I do, too. I brought one of the packages this evening. I do have one for you. And there's also America Speaks. So I'll make sure to have those in your office in the morning. And it was very interesting. So I'll let, thank you.
I have a question.
Yes. Commissioner Warren?
Yes, I noticed in your chart in here on the client assistance that you had a pretty high number of clients that needed mental health and drug and alcohol services. And is some of that being provided through CHC, or do those all get referred to the county, or how are those handled?
Actually, both, but pretty much Community Health Centers has really stepped up to the plate, especially out of 13th Street, the homeless project. They have done, I can't believe how much service out of that facility there, but also with them bringing on board Dr. Takata, she's already booked out maybe 6 to 8 weeks. I mean, it's incredible, and it's not just there, but also our mental health and drug and alcohol services. I mean, the services provided, it's just never enough. You know, unfortunately, the dollars are just not there, but we're like looking into and kind of brainstorming other ideas, other ways of delivering service, you know, along with the long-term case management program that hopefully will get on the road down, you know, in the near future, you know, just to address those chronic and maybe come up with a more integrative delivery service and really stretch the dollars.
Right. I was glad to see that you're looking at that long-term piece for folks.
Yeah. So it's just collaborating and seeing who's providing what and kind of sharing the dollars, you know.
Is Dr. Takata a psychiatrist?
She is a psychiatrist, yes.
And what office is she located, or is she floating?
She's right here in San Luis Obispo. Dr. Guzman and then a couple other licensed social workers are out of 13th Street, and they do come to Prado, and they do they are up north in Atascadero. But she's stationed here in the city of San Luis Obispo. Dr. Thomas, she's out of which building? I think it's specialty.
Yeah, it's the old annex of the General Hospital, so in the health campus now.
Okay.
Yeah, the health campus.
13th Street in what town?
In Which Grover 13th? Beach.
Grover That's, Beach, yeah. 13th
7, 10,
Street.
7, 10, 13th Street. It's where they originally stationed the homeless project program, which included mental health services.
Any other questions for Mary? Thank you very much. We really appreciate that you're here every month. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
Okay, moving along. Commissioner updates. I don't have anything to update for the chair update, so let's start on my right with Commissioner Warren.
I don't
Okay.
Okay, Commissioner Horn.
I'm sorry.
How about Commissioner Warren?
Right. Drug and Alcohol Services Advisory Board meeting was overtaken by the fact that they're getting ready to move to the new health campus. But one of the things that came up in that meeting that I wanted to mention to any of the commissioners that might like to take advantage of a training that is happening September 28th, and I can forward you the flyer. It's on co-occurring disorders, and it's a Dr. Kenneth Minkoff from Harvard, and he's just excellent. I had a chance to hear him a couple of years ago, and I'm thrilled that we're getting him here in our county, and he's going to be speaking on September 28th to all the staff of behavioral health, mental health, and drug and alcohol. But I know that the other providers can attend also. So if anybody's interested, see me after, and I'll get you information.
Thank you very much. And Commissioner Horn has nothing to report. Okay, how about Commissioner Schmoussis?
I was unfortunately unable to attend the Adult Services Policy Council meeting, but I will present on the meeting minutes as well as the September meeting at our next meeting.
Thank you. Commissioner Hetherington?
I attended the Domestic Violence Task Force meeting, and they are going to be our main focus on the November meeting, and they're very excited to be able to have this platform. I think just in defining what domestic violence is and knowing that the last three crimes, murder crimes in our county were domestic violence, I think will make for a very enlightened session.
And I think we're really looking forward to that. Commissioner Garena?
Yes, I attended the California Speaks conference this Saturday, and a couple of handouts. It's an interesting setup. It was it turned out to be about 3,500 Californians in eight sites who got together to discuss health care, and these people were people who felt strongly about health care because they gave up their Saturday in the summer. It was a 9 to 4:30 meeting. Our meeting here was in at the Madonna Expo area, and it was supposedly randomly selected people, and my wife got a phone call, and I came as her guest. And that's how I ended up going to this thing. And they used what they call a 21st century town meeting format, which was really, really interesting. We were linked by satellite to the seven other places in the state where we could see and hear what everyone had to say. We voted using little touch pads when questions came up. And it was constructed in a way where questions were asked, and then we would give responses. Every table, there were about 300 people at this location. There were 30 tables, 30 laptops, and someone would throw in their responses. And it was all gathered up quickly and sent back to us. It was touted to be California's chance to talk and give their views to the governor and the state legislature on what we want for health care reform. And as a matter of fact, Governor Schwarzenegger and a couple of other legislators were there touting it. And it was quite interesting. What was interesting was that what I've included here is the preliminary recommendations, and I've also included a comparison of the health plans that we're talking about right now in the state, so we can kind of keep up on what's going on with it. I've included also what they gave us as a California Speaks participant guide that was supposed to guide us through our discussion. It turned out this guide was framed in such a way to only discuss the governor's plan and the other plan that Nunes plan that were coming together, and it was obviously framed so much so that there was anger and contempt throughout all sites immediately. There were, matter of fact, chants from Humboldt of single payer, single payer. Sheila Kuehl had no part of this at all, which was quite interesting. The participant guide really says nothing about single payer, but they were forced at the end to talk about single payer. And at the end, it turned out that over 50% wanted single payer on the table to discuss. So what was interesting is we were all led to believe that this is our way of giving information to the governor and the legislatures, yet there is something on page 13 of the guide that says that the single-payer system is really not on the table because the governor is going to veto it again like he did last year. So who knows if he was at the L.A. Opening, then he took off, and I'm not sure he heard all this. But as far as being a participant, it was just wonderful to sit in a room with 300 San Luis residents, all passionate about healthcare, to throw discussions back and forth. And hopefully somebody in Sacramento will be listening to us. I also included at the very end some myths and facts regarding undocumented residents and healthcare resources. One of the things that came up often was everyone is afraid that all of their healthcare resources will be swallowed up by undocumented workers, and the state put out actually a document that said that that's not the case, that they use considerably less than people think. So that was something that was interesting.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Grena. This is really interesting. Does anybody right offhand have some questions of Commissioner Grena about his experience? Commissioner Hetherington.
I got. What was the split on slow as far as looking at the three at the two and not having the single payer on?
Well, if you actually go through the preliminary report. And if, for example, if you start on page 3 of the preliminary report, it was set up as we were to talk about proposed changes for employer responsibilities. And then we were going to talk about everything there. And then we were going to talk about changes in government responsibilities, and then changes in insurer, and then changes in individual responsibilities. In each case, people were outraged that there was no single-payer discussion. And either in the missing or in their concerns, talked about single payer as being something at least we should talk about.
But I noticed that there's three. Is this part of the report that came afterwards?
No, I actually pulled that off of the California.
That was off another website. Okay.
Website. This is.
Oh, so that wasn't part of the.
No, but this is the latest for our benefit. Of what's out there. Nunes and Parada had separate bills. They've combined those bills. The governor's plan, nobody's has submitted it yet, so it's really not even out there. And of course, the SB 840 has been approved again, like it was last year, and it's just waiting to be vetoed.
Okay. Thank you very much. And I'm sure we'll all enjoy looking through this and. Maybe have more questions later, but it seems like was a good idea. Okay, let me see. Well, we still have Commissioner Mossy. Do you have anything to report? No report. Okay. So did we have any committees that met in the last month that there would be any committee reports? Back to looking for my agenda. No committee reports? I don't know why I keep losing this agenda. This is really interesting.
I was forced to learn.
At any rate, we are since there are no committee reports, I did understand that correctly. The last subject on the agenda is our future items, and we are planning to have the assessment center. Dr. Holyfield and hopefully Lisa Frazier from Beginnings, and we wanted to talk, and we'll cover autism, and probably the medically fragile will fit nicely into that group of subjects. So stay tuned, and we'll let you know. All right. Is there anything else from any commissioners?
Commissioner Hetherington.
I got a phone call. I can't remember if it was shortly after the retreat or shortly before the retreat, and I neglected to bring this up. I'd gotten a call from somebody in South County down by the strawberry fields that had experienced a exposure to pesticide drift. So I wanted to ask Jean, when was the last pesticide task force that we did? Is it time again, or is that? I'm sorry I didn't bring something up at the last meeting. Would you mind looking and then letting me know? Because I think maybe we should start looking at logs and things and see if there's actually been some reports of pesticide drift down there.
Did you want to make that a subject at a meeting, or just a report, perhaps?
I think just as long as Jean gives us an update, because I think the grand jury wanted us to do it yearly, and we fell back, Dr. Thomas, I think, to every 3 years.
Yeah,
and I would hate to miss that deadline.
I don't think that was 3 years ago, though. Was it? Uh-oh. Time goes awfully fast, doesn't it? Was it really? All right, then. I think we've come to the end of the evening, and I'll entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
There being no opposition, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you all very much.